So we're here with Stefan Avalos of the new documentary Strad Style, which actually won the Slamdance Best Documentary Feature, Audience Award, and Grand Jury Award. So that's impressive because not only was it seen as a good film and a good made film, but the audience really loved it. So why don't you talk about that just to start us off with there, Stefan?
Yeah, well, those two wins were really gratifying, and yeah, like you said, it does sort of indicate that not just the sort of, you know, know-it-all film critics like it, but also the sort of general audience. And it's something that I've seen kind of happen repeatedly, which is great. So ultimately, you want to make a movie that, you know, people actually want to see and enjoy. And I think it also sort of speaks to what the movie's actually about, which is not really so much violin making and the violin world so much as sort of like this hope and dreams that we all have, you know?
Yeah, you make it as it's more of a every man's story of their dreams perhaps coming true.
Yeah, exactly, right. I mean, I tell people, you know, I was like, you know, this movie is about a violin maker, but it could have very well been about a guy who wants a great race car or a house or a clock or something. It didn't have to be the violin necessarily.
So I imagine probably the number one question you've been asked is, how do you find this guy?
Yeah, that actually has been absolutely the number one question. Well, I was working on a much broader documentary about this sort of three-century obsession with quote-unquote secret of Stradivari violins and this sort of covetous desire that people have, kind of almost a King Midas with gold, about wanting to play them and own them, collect them, steal them, counterfeit them, you know, figure out the science behind them, make this and that. And in the course of that, I heard about this crazy dude out in the middle of nowhere, Ohio, via a person who was in the Columbus Symphony Orchestra. So I thought that, you know, he would make kind of a fun 5-minute sort of tangent in my much more serious movie. But after about half an hour of, you know, talking with him, I realized, okay, I've got a whole different movie here. And a movie that'll be, I think, unique within the violin documentary movie genre. And I'm very glad I took that sort of turn. So it's a very different movie than it started out as.
Was it difficult to make that turn? Did you have investors? Did you have to pitch the idea to somebody else? Or were you just able to make that choice yourself?
Yeah, that's a good question. Well, I self-financed the movie. I had no investors. I was beholden to nobody but myself. But that said, I had been shooting for a couple of years. I mean, we started shooting in Paris, and we shot New York and L.A., Indianapolis, a bunch of other places. So I had spent a significant amount of money already and invested a lot of, you know, sort of time and hope and sort of that into it. So it was a little bit disconcerting to make that jump, but ultimately, I mean, I realized that was really the best thing, and that I had a story here that could really be something. And I can return to this. I can return to another movie if I like. I have a lot of footage that I set aside, which I can use, which is great stuff.
Did you, when you were making that decision, did you decide on your own, or did you consult with people you knew, or was it more of something you said, wow, this guy's something, I got to do it?
No, I had some pretty, like, you know, sort of good long conversations with my girlfriend, and she really helped me out a lot because she was just saying, like, well, there's no question, Danny's your story. So it was really, I really have to give thanks to Susan, who also has a co-producer credit in the movie. But she, you know, sort of, and she had been along with a ride, you know, helping me on these other shoots. But now she absolutely sort of thought, you know, no, you gotta make this movie about Danny. You know, to hell with all the other stuff that you've done so far. This guy's your story.
And like you said, you can put that stuff aside and just go back to it and revisit it if you want.
Yeah, exactly. I can do that, and I think probably I will do that at some point in the near future, because there is another. I do have another interesting story. It's a much more dry, purist story about the violin. But I've had a chance to interview some great violinists, makers, scientists. I've personally had a chance to play a lot of these violins. Also, I'm a former violinist, so being able to play these multi-million-dollar violins is also a cool thing. So I think I'll return to that.
So that's the next question. So you got to this because you already were a violinist, and you obviously enjoyed the violin.
Yes, and no comment. I was a violinist, a professional violinist at one time. And of course I enjoyed it, but it's a very, very difficult instrument and lifestyle, one that sort of demands everything from you. And so at a certain point in my sort of earlier life, I switched over to making films because that was really where my passion was, more so than playing the violin. But playing the violin, being a classically trained violinist, certainly was, I think, the impetus for the original movie, and helped me, I think, really have an insight, that I don't think other filmmakers would have had.
The structure of the film lends to telling the documentary story, but also leaves certain things unsaid until later in the film. You can talk a little about how you decided to structure the film.
I reveal things throughout the movie that I think offer surprises to people in terms of Danny's life and certain aspects of his being himself. Which I kind of like to do is kind of like an onion, just let people see more and more into character of Danny and his world.
Did you know Danny was planning to contact this violinist and make this violin for him, or did this come as you were filming him?
Danny, that was not a part of his future. I met him, and actually the opening shots in the movie are from the very first day that I met him. And at that point, I thought, well, this guy's a real character. He's really interesting. Maybe I'll follow him making a violin, and then at the end of it, maybe based on some of these violinists that I've met or the violin makers, he can take his violin to somebody and they can assess it. And that was the initial idea. And it wasn't until about a year later that Danny contacted me and said, hey, listen, I'm going to make a violin for this really famous violinist and that I met on the internet. And that might be interesting. And so that happened. And then from there, and really at that moment I realized, whoa, now I have a real premise. I have a real storyline to follow here. And so from that moment on, I really immersed myself in Danny's life. So the event, the meeting of Razvan on the internet actually happened. That happened. And then from there on in, I just followed Danny in real time.
So if you're going to look at this as like a writing or a script, you can almost give Danny almost a writing credit because he came up with basically the idea of the film in a sense.
Certainly, I story credit. I mean, absolutely. I mean, it is his story that I follow. So, definitely, as it unfolds, it's unfolding, much because of the way Danny is making it unfold. So, certainly, if there were a story credit in a documentary, I think that the subjects would generally have to some kind of credit in that.
The way that you explained it sounded interesting too, but it's a totally different film.
Oh yeah, it's an absolutely different movie. Yeah, no, I mean once the whole thing with this making this violin for Razvan happened, I just went with it. I just went with the flow, and there was a nice sort of end point where things were going to come to an end, for better or for worse. And so I just followed, the train as it went down those tracks. And in editing the movie, I'm a narrative filmmaker, I've been a narrative film first and foremost and a screenwriter. And in editing the movie, the other thing that kind of also really worked very well was that I was able to sort of follow that kind of hero's journey arc pretty closely with Danny. I mean, Danny really does follow that all that journey pretty accurately, that sort of Joseph Campbell journey. So there's that.
This really had a great structure moving into it once you were in touch with the violinist, it seems.
Yeah, for sure. And and I was hoping, I mean, even when I initially started, the idea of making a violin, you know, there is a beginning, middle, and end there. So I think that the structure was self-evident even from the get-go. It was just that who knew how fortuitous and what good luck there would be in terms of this entire story unfolding. It really was a once-in-a-lifetime sort of dream scenario for a doc filmmaker, because sometimes you do struggle with trying to find a story in amazing content. But in this one, you know, as I was shooting the film, you know, I definitely had a sense of a chronology there that was going to work out in the editing process.
But you also have to look at the fact that you're, in a sense, you know, courage to make that leap originally, and then to make that big change after 2 years of footage, and letting Danny sort of, in a sense, dictate the film, because what if that wasn't what you were looking at, right? It's smart thinking. So you're obviously, this may be your first doc, but it's certainly not your first film, and you can definitely see the strength of your filmmaking aptitude.
Yeah, no, I mean, once the movie was sort of in the can and I was editing, I became a narrative filmmaker again. That was definitely actually a trick, because as a narrative filmmaker, I'm very disciplined. I don't go on set and improvise. That's just not my style. So I go in with a real sort of, you know, premeditated notion of everything, right down to where that camera's going to be. And so shooting a doc, much more of sort of a jazz improvisation when you're on set. That was a bit tricky at first, and that was ultimately exhilarating. It was very sort of freeing. Definitely I applied all the rules of narrative filmmaking to the editing structure, you know, to the editing process of the movie. And one of the things I did, I had shot a lot of interviews with the movie also. You know, your sort of classic sit-down interviews with people, various people. And I decided to dispense with those. I decided to just sort of try to make this movie as much of a narrative as possible, not with the sit-down interviews and that sort of typical documentary stuff that we see in so many. I kind of really try to sort of channel what the Maisels or Frederick Wiseman would have done in terms of how they shot their films.
Well, it's interesting because your comment about it being more like a jazz improvisation is what Vilmos Zsigmond used to say about working with Robert Altman.
Yeah, well, Altman, I mean, yeah, see, there's exactly a guy who's very improvisational. Let me rephrase. Robert Altman is very, very premeditated, especially with his sound. But once on set, I think he allowed a lot of wiggle. And that's something that I strive to do. I can learn to do that. But as of yet, I'm still kind of very stuck in doing things, not deviating too much from the course, just because it's so complicated to get all your shots.
Yeah. Well, we would see when your next narrative feature comes, we would see when you're making it, if you have that feeling of, okay, everything's set, now let it gestate, or no, everything's set, let's do exactly what we say.
Yeah, exactly. You know, we'll see how it goes. I think that making this movie has been a great experience in that regard, and has really allowed, you know, yeah, I think helped my jazz chops, so to speak. I think another aspect of that also is that the gear, the camera gear that I'm using now, this sort of full age of very small, high-quality cameras and lights allows for that a bit more easily. A lot easier to turn around, do a turnaround now than it used to be, or to just, you know, change lenses out and shift your, you know, literally shift your focus of your, you know, of your story. It's not like the days of shooting on film. So I think there's that.
How would you sort of compare the two, you know, over this amount of time of, you know, your experience moving forward?
structured as a mock doc. But the first time, we were kind of going more improvisational there. But the big difference between the two movies was that we were making a comment on how heavy-handed some of the reality. The documentary, at those points, they were called like true crime movies. Reality television didn't exist at that point. So we were sort of going the opposite direction of being very heavy-handed in sort of the documentary filmmaker telling the story and being right there on camera with a microphone in his face. So that was very different from Strad style, which is tries to keep the documentary filmmaker out of it as much as possible. The new equipment, the better equipment, of course, experience, I think, just makes for more solid storytelling and filmmaking in general.
Well, it was a very successful film, and then afterwards Blair Witch came out, which was very similar as well. So it seemed like you had hit a nerve in regards to telling a story.
Yeah, for sure. Last broadcast definitely did hit a nerve, and that's something that, it's probably, I think, with a lot of storytellers, hopefully it is true, but I had a sense of being able to keep my finger on the pulse of what's happening and writing a story or making a story that does work. Hopefully the same will happen to Strad style. It's interesting because this is a real year of sort of very dark, quote-unquote, socially relevant sort of documentaries. And Strad style is not that. Strad style is a human interest movie. About the human condition. So we'll see, because it's actually playing against a lot of what is going on in the documentary world this year.
Well, thanks a lot for the talk, Stefan. And I know you're going to be in Hot Docs this week and sure going to have some great screenings there. And hopefully we'll be able to speak to you at another time to see how it all shakes out.
Absolutely. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.